We're holding the middle of Parshas Matos. What have we seen thus far? We saw the laws of taking vows. The Torah doesn't encourage us to take vows. We discussed the difference between Nedarim and Shvuos. We discussed the ability of a husband to be meifer, to annul a vow from the minute he hears it onward, and the ability of a chacham to be matir, to annul a vow retroactively. We discussed why the Torah made it so that a husband or a father can annul his wife or daughter's vows. We discussed the revenge from the Midianites. What was the intent? Why do we take revenge? What's the idea? And we discussed the idea that the Midianites had one intent in their actions, and that was to make a sin. We discussed that God said that this was going to be Moshe's last act, the last major battle, before he passes on, and nonetheless Moshe is swift in fulfilling it. And the people didn't want to volunteer, so they drew lots and they took 1,000 from each tribe, because initially the intent was not to conquer Midian, but rather to attack Midian, to do an act of revenge. But God's plan was different, and we ultimately conquered them. And then we ended last night with a discussion of the laws of how we make vessels kosher, how we do hagalat kelim, how we can purge the flavor from the walls of a vessel. And we discussed the laws of how vessels absorb flavor and how we have to take the flavor out. We discussed the concept that after me'es, le'es, midoraisa, biblically, the next day we say that the flavor is pungent, the flavor is harmed, and really we wouldn't have to kosher the vessels. It's a rabbinic institution that after a 24-hour period we have to. We never got to discuss the difference between earthenware vessels and metal vessels and glass vessels. We said we're going to leave that for a different class. We discussed the mitzvah of tvilat kelim, the mitzvah that when we have a vessel that enters Jewish ownership from non-Jewish ownership, if this is a vessel that comes in direct contact with food and the final preparation of food, that vessel has to be immersed in the mikveh waters when it is completely clean, when it has no rust, when it has no dirt on it, it has no stickers on it. That vessel must be taken to a mikveh and immersed, provided that that vessel is made of one of the metals, then it is biblical, or if that vessel is made of glass, then it is rabbinic that that vessel has to be immersed. And we had a discussion, what about our porcelain and our earthenware today, which is coated with a glaze? And that's basically where we left off yesterday. Revi, which is where we're holding, God tells Moshe to take account of what they've brought, the loot, and then to divide it, and to take off a tax that's going to go to the Kohen, and a tax for the Levim. And we discussed that this was unusual, in that ordinarily the Kohanim and Levim don't get a portion of the loot. God says that the Levim, their portion is God. They're not supposed to have a portion of the loot. And the reason why they are going to get this portion is because this isn't part of the conquering of the land of Israel. And we discussed three halachic differences that were applicable to this war with Midian, as opposed to the war with Sihon, because this was not part of the conquering of the land of Israel. And now we're holding by Shishi. Before we hit Shishi, we skipped one point. The people who went to war come to Moshe, and they say, we want to bring all of the loot that we got, we want to bring it as a sacrifice to Hashem. And Moshe asked them, well, did one of you sin with the daughters of Midian when you were in the middle of war? And they say, no, lo nifkad mimenu ish. We were always careful that we worked together. We went minimum in pairs, because we knew that it's possible that one of us would be seduced. So when we went to war, we were always careful to be together in groups, so that lo nifkad mimenu ish, no one was found alone. We went as groups. So Moshe said, then why are you bringing this offering? What do you need atonement for? So they said, well, when we went to war, the Midianite women came out to us. They saw they were losing. So they sent their girls coming out, and the girls weren't dressed. So we had improper thoughts when we saw this. And so we wanted an atonement for our improper thoughts. And their vessels, the things they donated, were taken and instituted in the temple. They were made kli shores that would be a remembrance for the Jewish people this victory against the Midianites. And from here we derive an important point. The people, when they came and they gave their donation, they said, we're bringing the bracelets, and we're bringing the rings, and we're bringing the kumaz. Kumaz was an ornament that they wore over their private part. That was something that theoretically no one should see but a husband. And yet they brought that, and the pasuk puts them all together. And from here we derive a halachic point that if one looks with intent at a woman, even if he looks at her finger, she's wearing a ring, then there's no difference if he looks, not no difference, but it's as bad as if he looked at the most private parts. A person is forbidden to see parts of a woman that are supposed to be covered. So that's obvious. I mean, that's what a person is forbidden to see, even just in passing. And the person is forbidden to look at, meaning to look for the sake of enjoyment, any part of a woman, even her hand. The Gemara says, Yad li yad lo inakeha, even if a person is just giving change into a woman's hand, but he's looking and he looks at her hand and he enjoys looking at the beauty of her hand, so lo inakeha, he won't come clean from ra. Ra is a term of for Gehenna. Yeah, Emmanuel.
I was two Shabbat in a house, and I went to sleep early, and then I wanted to go to the toilet, and next to the toilet, that the bathroom, this was a woman, and she had no head covering on. So I was directly turning away, and I still saw it. Is it my fault or her fault?
Head covering is something that we're slightly more lenient about because we're accustomed to seeing women's hair. When we go around, you go on the street, you see all the women who aren't married, you see their hair. All the non-Jewish women, you see their hair. Even many married women, unfortunately, you see their hair. So head covering, when it comes to hair, we treat it slightly different than any other covered part of a person. One is not supposed to make havdalah when his wife's hair isn't covered. But nonetheless, if one is sitting on a bus and the only problem is that there are women with uncovered hair, so then we're more lenient than if there are other parts. If a woman's wearing, a miniskirt, or there are parts above her knees revealed, so then a person can't really mouth the words that he's learning. But if her hair is uncovered, then we're more lenient. With regard to hair, we're more lenient. Aside from which, if we go with the dry halacha, it isn't clear at all that she's prohibited to walk around without a head covering in her home. Meaning, I know that today we've accepted the custom that people don't do it. But if you look at Rashi, when the Gemara discusses head covering, Rashi seems to say that it was common practice that in their courtyards the women walked around without a head covering. The Gemara says at one point, where does a woman require head covering? And then the Gemara says, if you'll say in this place she requires a head covering, then you don't leave over a single daughter for Avraham Avinu. And according to Rashi, if I remember correctly, that Gemara is discussing within the courtyard, meaning that would be the equivalent of the hall in an apartment building. Even so far, women used to go with their hair uncovered. So today, we're more stringent. We have the custom that women never uncover their hair when there's a stranger around. But if we're going with the dry halacha, I'm not sure she transgressed any halacha, not she nor you. Okay. Right. Does anyone know where the freezer is in the building where I've begun? Where they have a fridge in the coffee room? Yeah, do you mind bringing it there? Thank you. In the freezer part. The top part. Thank you. But the cones you could leave here. The cones leave here. Shkwah. And the spoon I need back. Promise my wife I'll bring home. What?
You want the spoon?
You know what? Leave the spoon there. I'll pick up. Thank you. We're holding by Shishi. And here, suddenly the Navi tells us that the tribe of Reuven and Gad had a lot of cattle. The Medrash says that a Roman woman once came to, which Tana was it? I don't remember. 1 second. Roman woman once came to Rabbi Shmuel bar Chalafta, and she asked him, how many days did it take God to create the world? So he told her, in 6 days. That's what the verse says. God created the world in 6 days. So she asked him, ever since God created the world, what's he been busy with? So he told her, from the time he created the world What he's been doing is creating ladders. Some people he brings up the ladder, some people he brings down the ladder. Ever since God finished creating the world, God is busy making ladders. Ki Elokim Shofet, God is in constant judgment. Ze yashpil ve yarim, the verse says in Tehillim. He puts this one down and this one up. How do we see? We see that from our story. The tribe of Reuven and Gad, God wanted them to become wealthy, so God made the Midianites full. They weren't naturally, they weren't supposed to lose their whole country to us. We were supposed to do some kind of guerrilla attack, an act of revenge, and then continue with our lives. But God made it that against all odds, 12,000 men against the troops of Midian, which only a few hundred years later are described as having so many troops like the sand on the sea. It's described by Yiftach. By Gidon, I'm sorry. So these 12,000 men overtook them. Why? God wanted that the tribe of Reuben and Gad will become wealthy. And they became wealthy from that loot. And that's one example of the latter. The Medrash says, it says in the verse in Tehillim, Ki lo mimotza umima'arav, doesn't come from the east, where the sun comes out. It doesn't come from the west, where the sun sets. But rather, a person might think that if he travels east, west, he's a big businessman, he'll become wealthy. No, that's not how he's going to become wealthy. The way a person is wealthy is if God wants him to become wealthy. When God decides that a person will become wealthy, so God makes it that a person will become wealthy. And God wanted the Midianites to lose their wealth and to make someone else wealthy, so that's what God did. The Medrash says, why is it that we call our assets nichasim? Nichasim comes from the word nichsim, they get covered. One day you have them, the next day you don't. You think that the assets are permanent? Says the Medrash, no, that's why in Hebrew we call them nichasim. Assets are called things that get covered. You have at one point they're by one person, the next day they're by someone else. Why are... What? In the parasha it doesn't say it. In general we call them. Why is it that we call money zuzim? Because zuz refers to zaz. The money is in constant movement. Money is round. Sometime you're on top, sometime you're on bottom. Like the Rambam says, give charity because one day you're on the giving end and you could rest assured that at some point, if not your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren will be on the receiving end. That's the way the world works. Why are they called mammon? Mammon, right? Mammon is money in Hebrew. It means ma she'ata moneh eino klum. What you're counting is nothing. Today you can count your money. Today you have your assets. But tomorrow you may not. Why do we call money ma'ot? Ma'ot, the concept is ne'et le'et. They have a short time. They are temporary. Usually when a person has wealth, he thinks like, why do people take out huge mortgages? They're sure, if I'm making $500,000 this year, I'll make $500,000 next year. So I could take out a mortgage on $3 million. No. Chazal warned us, you can never know what. Don't have confidence in tomorrow. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. So the Medrash says that this is the ladder, that ever since God finished creating the world in 6 days, God is busy making ladders. One goes up, one goes down. That's the way the world works. So the tribe of Reuben and Gad, they had a lot of cattle and they had a lot of wealth. Yeah?
We said about one going up, one going down. The situation with Jan, is it at all related to the promise about the, between Esav and the...
That's something else.
And Yaakov, that if you're strong, if Yaakov is strong, Esav is weak.
That's something else. That's a different balance. Yeah. Here we're talking also on a personal level. But this is also what they say in English. One man's fortune is another man's sorrow. So that's this concept. That Hashem will bring one person down the ladder so that someone else can go up the ladder. That's how God runs the world. Now, Reuven and Gad are going to step forward and say, look at all this land, this luscious land, so fertile. We want it for our cattle. And let us build fortresses for our cattle and homes for our kids. And Moshe says, what? You're more concerned about your money than your kids? First you're asking me to build fortresses, build pens for your cattle, and then you're talking to me about building homes for your kids? No. If God approves it, then you can build homes for your kids, and then also build place for your cattle. The Medrash says that God created three special gifts in this world. God created wisdom, God created power, might, and God created wealth. If a person merits, God gives him one of those gifts. And if he has one of those gifts, then with that gift he could acquire everything in the world. But sometimes people have the gift and they've acquired it from below. They haven't gotten it as a gift from above. There were two very wise men in the world. One among the Jews and one among the non-Jews. Among the Jews, his name was Achitophel. He was so wise that his advice was better than anyone else's. As good as asking God. Where did it get him? Ein lo chelek lo'olam haba. He doesn't have a portion in the world to come. It got him to advise Avshalom to go and take his father's wives and take him on a rooftop. It got him to ultimately commit suicide. Where did it get him? All the wisdom he had, he fought for it. It wasn't a blessing from above. The one of the wise men from the world, that's Bilam. Where to get him? He lost also this world and the world to come. There were two great warriors in the world. One among the Jews and one among the non-Jews. Among the Jews there was Shimshon, Samson. Among the non-Jews there was Goliath, Goliath. Both of them, their might is what brought them down ultimately. There were two great wealthy people in the world. One among the Jews and one among the non-Jews. Korach among the Jews was exceptionally wealthy. Haman among the non-Jews was exceptionally wealthy. And both of them lost this world and the world to come. Why? Because it wasn't God-given. They fought, they acquired their gifts, but it wasn't God-given. And the same thing we find with the tribe of Reuven and the tribe of Gad. They had a lot of cattle, but they loved their money more than anything else. And they said, we're willing to stay in Chutzlarts, but let's make it good for our Parnassah. If it's good for Parnassah and Chutzlarts, so we're willing to go there. And God said, oh, your money is more important for you than anything else. Your money is important enough for you that you'll separate from your families. You two tribes are going to be alone out there in Chutzlarts. You're willing to forgo Israel. You're willing to forgo living in the land of Israel. I'm going to ensure that that money won't last you. And the tribe of Reuben and God, the Medrash says that the wealth wasn't long lived. And also, these two tribes were the first to be exiled. When Sancheiriv came along, they were exiled first. There were three stages to the exile of the 10 tribes. The first stage were these two tribes, Reuven and Gad. They were exiled first. Yeah?
This was also part of Eretz Yisrael. It was a different level of Pesha.
So this is a discussion. What was the godly plan? What was supposed to happen with this land? Some say it was supposed to remain desolate. We weren't supposed to inhabit it. Others say we were supposed to inhabit it, but not this way. They stepped forward, and in their stepping forward, the land really didn't have the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. And they were saying, we will forgo our portion in the land of Israel so that we have this land, which is good for our cattle.
So this idea of three levels of Eretz Yisrael is not held by everybody?
What do you mean? No, that's an outcome. But look, it doesn't have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't. It's not Eretz Yisrael. They can't bring sacrifices there. All the hundreds of years that in Israel we were bringing sacrifices bibama, before we had the Beis Hamikdash, they couldn't bring a single sacrifice. Take that as an example. Truma, Meiser, Shemitah, that's Chutzlarts. The question was, what was God's plan? What was going to happen if they wouldn't have stepped forward? So there's a discussion.
Seems to put them in very bad light.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Chazal put them in a very bad light. Chazal say, notice how they speak. They say, let us take care of our cattle, and then let us take care of our kids. And Moshe says, okay, if God approves, then we'll take care of your kids, and we'll take care of your cattle. Let's put what's first. Yeah. So we'll have to get to that. So far they don't come in. They aren't mentioned in the... Good point. Right. 100%. So God.
What seems here to be the problem is the fact that they wouldn't join the brothers in battle first.
That was what Moshe suspected. Moshe said, "Wait a second. Well, you want to just take this land and let everyone else fight?" So they said, "No, we'll help with the fight, but we still want this land." We have
a pasuk. Right? The first ones.
Right. They led the war. God was very powerful. The pasuk says, "Nachla mevohelet barishona." If you take something quickly, v'achrita lo tevorach. You could rest assured that ultimately it won't succeed. Very often, when people try to con us into doing things, they try to rush us. You ever notice you come and you look at something in a store and he tells you, "Shnotz, the last one I got." he's trying to rush you to buy it. Very often, when people try to sell you something, they're trying to rush you. And Shlomo HaMelech warned us, Nachla mevohelet barishona. If you do something out of rush, out of fear, Nachla mevohelet ba'ala, it could mean fear, could mean rush. Ve'achrita, ultimately, lo tevorach. It won't be blessed, it won't last. A person has to know that the risk of jumping into something is greater than the risk of losing it. And almost always, when we're rushing into something, we lose. What did the tribe of Reuben and Gad do? They rushed into it. They didn't see the land of Israel yet. How did they know that the land of Israel wasn't more luscious than the eastern side of the Jordan? They didn't know. They hadn't seen the land of Israel. And yet they were willing to jump in and say, we want this land. This is better. So it's true. They got a tremendous, if you look at the map, they got a tremendous piece of land. It was so tremendous that when it came time to divide it between them, Moshe said, you guys can't take this land for yourself. You don't have enough people to inhabit it. So Moshe Rabbeinu asked for volunteers. Who wants to step forward and join Reuven and Gad? And two families from the tribe of Menashe joined. And in Hebrew, when we say chatzi, chatzi doesn't necessarily mean half. Chatzi means a portion. In modern Hebrew, chatzi means half. But in biblical Hebrew, chatzi doesn't have to mean a half. So when we say half the tribe of Menashe, there were 10 families in Menashe. Two of them stepped forward and they took from the... They said, we want to join them. And that's why initially only Reuven and Gad stepped forward. And afterwards, when it's time to really divide it, Moshe Rabbeinu saw, hey, there aren't enough people to inhabit this land. So Moshe Rabbeinu asked for volunteers who wants to join them. And that's when there were a total of 8 families in the tribe of Menashe. Two of them stepped forward and said, we'll join them.
Isn't this implying that this is not the Bedi Amid situation? That Moshe is willing to send people to that side of the...
He didn't send. Whoever wants to volunteer could come and be in Chutzal.
It's encouraging. He's giving us abilities, not that
okay.
It seems to be a spiritual disaster.
I don't know.
I want to ask you, because if Moshe is asking you if you want to do it, but that means it's a good thing.
I don't know.
Sorry, Ron. Jerome, do you want to say goodbye, everybody?
Ah, wow.